You are on The Next Level. This is The Beautiful Truth on BreakForNews.com, where the expression is still free.
20 seconds and counting. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour.
And you're very welcome. This is The Beautiful Truth on BreakForNews.com with Fintan Dunn reporting. Thanks for joining us. And thanks also to our sponsor, NeemWell.com. That's NeemWell.com. It's only the best herb on the planet, folks. So check it out. Hey, money's valuable, as you now know. Don't be giving it to the pharmaceutical industry, for crying out loud. Avoid pharmacies like the plague when you can go to neemwell.com instead and check out the products there, creams, lotions, and neem leaf powder, which is very good taken internally as well. So check it out, folks. Now, I got some good news and some bad news. Okay, you ready? The good news first? Okay. The good news is that the New World Order is imploding all around us. Even as we speak, it's now the 6th of October, Monday, the 6th of October. And the bad news. Okay, the bad news is the New World Order is imploding all around us, even as I speak. We are not out of the woods. This is indeed quite a dangerous time, but also a time of great opportunity. You know, in a way, I'm glad this thing has come to a head, because we were getting nowhere. And, now we're headed somewhere. We're just not quite sure where. But it sure is going to be interesting. Like, for example, it would be a really interesting time to be President of the United States. You know, because, hey, it's Criminomics. So you could just call Hank Paulson in. Take a seat, Hank. Look, Hank, the American people are sick and tired of you stealing their money. I'm going to put an end to it. From now on, we're just going to give you the money, Hank. Straight. And that's just so much more efficient than you having to go to all that trouble. All that endless paperwork. Derivatives and all that stuff to try and steal the money. We just give you the money direct. Hey, wouldn't it? Yeah. Hey, we could, you know, get with the program. Criminomics. 1-800-GOV-KILL. Solve the problem of murder. You're thinking of killing somebody? Don't do it. Call 1-800-GOV-KILL. We'll have the cops around to that guy's place in minutes and we'll waste them. Yeah, it's ridiculous, isn't it? But then things do get ridiculous at the end of an era. And this is the end of an era. The monopoly capitalism system has been working on the principle that you can, hey, keep blowing air into a balloon, and the only rule is, it keeps getting bigger. Hey, that's true, isn't it? Yeah. More air gets bigger, more air gets bigger. You can't go wrong. Until, of course, you get to the moment when it bursts, because there's too much air. And that's what's just happened. And that is tanking the McCain presidential campaign. Even as we speak, McCain is going down the tubes in swing states with an almost unstoppable momentum. The economic issue has taken over as the primary issue for Americans, understandably, as they're the ones who are going to lose the most in this international realignment of the rules of capital. Now, the game plan was that McCain would act as a buffer, so to speak, that with Americans increasingly deserting the Republican Party in droves, that they could at least retain control of the White House, and that would continue to act as a buffer, the role of the president being a very good propaganda role for them. But that strategy is in tatters as I speak, because only a stunt or a series of stunts can save McCain at this point and take the focus off the economy and get it onto some other issues. So yeah, these guys are like those desperados who robbed the bank, and they're galloping away on horseback with the posse in hot pursuit, and everything's fine until the desperados run up a dead-end canyon, at which point they're cornered. So these people are cornered, and they're dangerous when cornered. So if Osama bin Laden puts out a statement, you'll know we're in trouble. There are two ways they can handle it from here. One is to escalate. That's the military option. And the other way is to go with the flow and try and contain it. That's always been the plan B, that Obama would win the election, and then they would hope that Obama would be able to contain the situation with some kind of a new deal. That new deal, by the way, will involve huge increases in taxes. In fact, no matter what way this works out, it's going to involve big increases in taxes. That seems to be the strategic plan. So but let's take a look at how we got here at a systemic level and in terms of the real economy and the fake economy. I mean, this economics is a game where everybody's agreed on certain rules, as in a game of Monopoly. You land on a certain square, you pay a certain rent, somebody accumulates a vast amount of capital and wins the game. Yeah, that's why I call it Monopoly capitalism. So at one level, it is a game, but it's a game that's plugged into the very structure which we use to run our lives. And deconstructing and reconstructing at that level is a messy business. Has been messy previously, and it will be messy this time around as well. Because this is no mere subprime crisis or liquidity crisis. This is a deep systemic crisis in the very nature of monopoly capitalism. And to understand where we are in that crisis, we got to look at how we got here. Looking at how we got here involves from the personal perspective and from the systemic perspective. From the systemic perspective, how we got here started off with neoliberalism, the era of Reaganism and Thatcherism. And that was about removing state constraints on the flow of capital and wealth, and about redistributing income to the rich from the poor and middle classes. That's classic Reaganism and Thatcherism. The idea being that would stimulate the rich to invest more in production. Unfortunately, what tended to happen more was that the rich got involved in speculation. So then they needed to come up with new solutions. And the next one was globalization as a response to, as I say, systemic crises in the very nature of capitalism itself, which tends to overproduce. And as it overproduces, then profits decline. For example, the profit rate of the Fortune 500 companies back in the 60s to 70s was about 7%. In the 80s, that had dropped to about 5.5%. In the 90s, that had dropped to about 2.25%, and it had dropped to about 1.25% by the year 2000 to 2002. So here you see the actual profits obtained by the huge vested financial interests trending downwards over that period, forcing them into a series of maneuvers to try and extricate themselves from the collapsing profit element, which is built in to capitalism, which tends to overproduce, as I say. So none of this is admitted to the public, who are continually told that, hey, everything's fine and, you know, capitalism, hey, works. But so globalization was the next phase after that initial neoliberalization of economics. Globalization was about getting new cheap labor into the system. It was about, for example, moving into China. It was also about opening up Eastern Europe to try and get access to cheap labor. The idea being that you would capitalize their undercapitalized economies. And that process of globalization was the next phase of attempting to cope with the profit collapse. And even that didn't work. Still didn't manage to produce sufficient profit to counteract the systemic problem in capitalism. So then began the third phase of it, which really kicked into high gear from about 98 onwards, and that is financialization. Now, globalization was always only going to be a short-term solution also, because the process of globalization affects the earning capacities in the home economies where these corporates are operating out of, because of cheap labor coming in from abroad, and also because you're bringing more production capacity into the equation and you already have an overcapacity problem. So they dug themselves into another hole. But even as they were digging themselves into that hole, they came up with the escape. And the escape for them was going to be the 9/11 event, to take everybody's eye off the ball. I covered that in the last audio. accelerating the process of globalization to try and get themselves to a global market situation before the whole thing imploded. And then financialization, which is the creation of a financial bubble economy, which is now bursting. And that, you know, the burst of that bubble is huge. To try and cope with the bursting of that bubble, they are injecting funds into the market, as we're told. But what we're not told is how virtually futile that is, because as you're seeing right now, no matter how much they pump in, and they're pumping it in hundreds of billions, globally they're pumping it in terms of trillion, 2 trillion, 3 trillion. The problem is, out there in the huge financial structure, which has built up particularly over the last about 8 years, is around about 2,000 trillion notionally of economic structure. 2,000 trillion. So throwing 1 or 2 or 3 trillion at that, trying to fix it, is virtually impossible. The Dow is headed, I don't even want to talk about the territory into which the Dow is headed. And that's going to be a wake-up call for people in the United States for sure. See, fractional reserve banking, upon which this is all fundamentally based, works off ratios like 10 to 1 leveraging, where for every $1 which the bank has on deposit, it can lend out $10. And that's 10 to 1 leveraging. And a lot of people say, hey, that's a dangerous game. Because if ever the people come looking for their deposits, you don't have it. It's out there in loans 10 times over. So how can you possibly come up with the money? You can't. In fact, that's where you see that the real economy, the money for it, comes out of the banks. Forget the notional underlying $1, which are the basis of it. No, the money is actually in that additional $9 of fractional reserve banking. That's who issues the money and who charges interest on the money, and who also controls where that capital is allocated. And increasingly, that capital has tended to be allocated to the moneyed class for giant escapades abroad or financial adventures. But what has happened is that that system has gone from leveraging of 10 to 1 to 20 to 1, 30 to 1, 40 to 1, 50 to 1, 60 to 1. And the problem for people in the United States who have money as opposed to directly owned assets, like directly owned assets is a home, is some land, is machinery, is stuff that you can use to make other stuff, or stuff that you can sell at any time because people need it. They need somewhere to live, they need food, basic stuff like that. But if you have just money, well, you have money, and it's in the stock market. But the stock market, as you see, is tanking. And the problem arises is this. The only way for you to get the money is to show up and cash it out. And if everybody starts to show up and cash it out, what that's going to do is crash the market. So there's a problem there. Now, yeah, you do have all those IRAs. You do have all that 401k stuff. You do have all those nice pieces of paper. But the problem is it's tied into that 2,000 trillion bubble, which is in the process of bursting right now. Get it? So where is it then? Well, it's over in China. It was used to build factories there. Well, it's been wasted. Because how societies progress is not by speculation. And Henry Ford's a great guy to check out on this subject, because Henry Ford's got some great sayings. Of course, famously, he said, it's well enough that people of the nation don't understand our banking and monetary system, because if they did, I believe there'd be a revolution before tomorrow morning. But he also said, speculation is only a word covering the making of money out of the manipulation of prices instead of supplying goods and services. He said the highest use of capital is not to make more money, but to make money do more for the betterment of life. Wow, nailed it, Henry. That's what produces social progress. Not money per se, but improvements in social efficiency. That's what makes money. You get that, for example, with inventions, such as the invention of the microcomputer, which produced the information technology revolution, and suddenly you're able to listen to this audio. And suddenly, we're all able to talk to each other across the globe using a communications infrastructure, and wow, did that do stuff for productivity. In particular, it enabled the emergence of this vast financial bubble using computing power and global instant trading, for example. But it's those developments in efficiency, either by improvements in system organization or by actual invention of new systems altogether. That's what produces progress, not the amount of money circulating, and certainly not money circulating leveraged 60 to 1. So we have moves at a systemic level right now to try and make sure there isn't a run on banks at a systemic level, you see. But how long is it going to be before they start making moves at a practical, local level to ensure there isn't a run on banks, like happened in Argentina back at the turn of the century, when they just froze the money in the banks? And yeah, you could make small withdrawals, but there's no way you're getting the mass of your loot out, because if everybody did that, the system would collapse. And if you think that's not coming in the United States, get real. Right now, there's an 80% chance that that's going to happen in the United States, because this bubble is bursting. So that's some of the systemic issues. What about at the grassroots level? Well, at the grassroots level, what progress has there been? For non-government workers in the United States, their earnings are barely higher than they were in the mid-1970s. In fact, right now, the income of a 30-year-old male is around 10-12% below what it was for the same individual 30 years ago. Now, over that time, actual productivity per person has grown considerably. But people haven't seen the benefit of those productivity gains, which are, as I say, the only true measure of social progress. And I don't define that tightly either in terms of sheer amount of stuff produced. No, if you've got a lot of people who need massive amounts of money going into healthcare because they're so ill, that's not progress. That indicates that the system has systemic medical problems built into it, and you need to sort those out. And if you do, then you're no longer wasting stuff, energy, time and money trying to heal people of what they're ill from, because your system is preventing them from getting ill in the first place. Nevertheless, despite that limitation, even on a goods produced basis, productivity was dramatically up over the last 30 years, especially since computing technology came into the equation. But people in the United States haven't reaped the benefit of that. The top 1% of Americans take home about 20% of the total national income. Back in 1980, the top 1% took home about 8%. Now, the problem is that the very wealthy have already got most of the stuff they need. And if they need to buy more, they can buy it. And of course, it's a global economy, so they're likely to buy products that come from outside the United States. And even worse, they are engaged in reinvesting their money abroad, wherever they can get the returns. So that money, which moved from the middle classes to the wealthy, from the poor to the wealthy, then exited the United States. Wasn't the first lot. And an awful lot of the money, which is apparently still in the United States, has in fact already exited. And that's what I mean about systemic collapse. Robert Reich was Labour Secretary for Clinton. And in a rare piece of realism, he recently wrote that the last time that the top 1% took home 20% of the total income in the United States was in 1928. And after that, the economy caved in. So bear that in mind. So that's what happened to the average American. Now, we've seen at a systemic level how they tried a series of moves to boost the profit base. That included neoliberalization, then globalization, and finally financialization, which has produced the current bubble. Well, the average American also went through a number of personal proceeds as a way of trying to deal with the economic climate. And one of them was the entry of huge numbers of women into the labor force, which didn't produce a doubling of national prosperity, did it? No. And then the next thing was working longer hours. So Americans have become virtual workaholics, putting in about 350 hours a year more than the average European, more even than the notoriously workaholic Japanese. And that still didn't work. So then people in the United States began to borrow. and with housing prices rising, that seemed like that was a solution. So you had the entry of women into the labour force, then you had increasing hours being worked by people in the United States, and finally people living on, literally, credit cards. So when Americans realise how thoroughly they've been ripped off, they're not going to be happy. Let me give you an idea of the scope of that. The entire global output, productive output, per annum comes to about 60 trillion per annum for the whole globe. And I've already talked about the 2,000 trillion in notional economic instruments, which is overshadowing that mere 60 trillion of global output per annum. So you can see the problem. Now, a lot of people say, okay, that huge derivatives mountain, a lot of the things in there cancel each other out, and really underlying that, there's nothing like 2,000 trillion. Yeah, that's true. But the problem is that you can't deconstruct that. It's like building a house of cards. You can build it higher and higher and higher and higher, but you can't come down to one of those levels and begin removing cards from the lower levels, or the whole thing falls apart. The flows of capital within that 2,000 trillion are such that dismantling that, if it dismantles, would involve the wreckage of around about at least 50% of all the banking institutions on the planet would just simply get wiped out in attempting to deconstruct that. And bubbles like that don't slowly deconstruct. The balloon bursts in a tenth of a second and you're left holding a burst balloon. That's what happens in real world situations. And this is the real world now that people in the United States are going to have to deal with. So when you take into account the underfunding of Social Security, when you take into account the real losses that have taken place on the balance sheets, when you take into account how much of those investments, retirement investments by Americans are still or are not still there, you're looking at a loss of national wealth to the United States, I'd estimate, of in the region of $100 trillion. There you go, folks. Did I say there was good news? Let's take a break from music. And we'll come back and look at some more of the structural issues, because people have got to understand this. But we got to play Manic Street Preachers and Masses Against the Classes. You just got to, don't you? Because we're there, baby. This is The Beautiful Truth on BreakForNews.com with Fintan Dunn reporting, and I'll be right back.
The country was founded on the principle that the primary role of government is to protect property from the majority, and so it remains.
And you're very welcome back. This is The Beautiful Truth on BreakForNews.com with Fintan Dunn reporting. Let's try and do some analysis of where this is headed. In order to do that, we got to understand where they think it's headed. We got to figure out what is the game plan of the international elite. And the game plan has been, yes, this is not unanticipated. As I covered in the last audio, 9/11 was immediately followed by China entering the World Trade Organization, and then we had the growth of China on the back of the US taxpayers who were about to be stung, and culminating in the Olympics. And then once the Chinese economy is up and running, so to speak, and the corporates are happy that the globalization project has been advanced another notch, well, then suddenly the economic problems hit. So 9/11 is deeply enmeshed with all of this. So they knew this was coming. The question is whether they're capable of managing what's about to happen. I mean, they're not going to let go of political and economic power easily. They do not want to let go of fractionalized reserve banking easily, or of the debt system, which is in place, easily. Now, they want to try and retain as much as possible of all that. So the game plan, the only game plan that would work, is some kind of a reflation and also huge increases in taxes, especially for people in the United States. The only way you could sell that to the US public is with some kind of a new deal wrapped into it. Let me just show you how that might work. For example, yeah, there is consternation. Yeah, there is chaos in the financial markets. But answer me this. Has that in any way impacted the number of motor vehicles which a worker in General Motors is capable of turning out in 1 hour? No, it hasn't. That number is still the same. Nothing in the actual real economy has changed. You see, what we're dealing with here is problems which exist in the rules of the monopoly game, which the real people are all committed to playing. Most of those real people being the ones who had no say in the rules of the monopoly game. So here you have two things. You have one is a financial structure overlaid on a real economy. In the real underlying economy, hey, it's not too bad. Suppose in the morning everyone's debt was zeroed out. I mean, that's your debt, AIG's debt, General Motors' debt, Lehman Brothers' debt, everybody's debt. Suppose in the morning everybody's debt is just zeroed across the board. Forget it. What would happen? Well, everyone would be freed up to a whole new era of economic expansion, freed from that debt. I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm just showing you the role of the monopoly game in how it's capable of stifling normal human productive activity. If you're playing a game of Monopoly where you can shove up the prices for landing on particular squares, well, then that's higher rents that have to be paid when that happens, and sooner or later you're going to run out of money. There simply won't be enough in the Monopoly money to cover the activity that's going on. So we've got a problem with the financial economy, but underneath all that, it ain't too bad. Now, do the financial elite want to let go of all that debt? Heck no. They're getting interest payments off that debt. But there's two things that those who have the most money have. One of them is they have pieces of paper that entitle them to interest, or a piece of the action in something. And then they have title to real hard physical assets. That's machinery, land, productive capacity. Now, what matters most, even if all the financial paper is wiped out, is who owns the productive capacity. So you can see that's a fallback option, is to retain control of the productive capacity no matter what happens to the pieces of paper. But they do have an overall game plan to try and get through this. and that involves an internationalization of the current crisis to a global level and some new financial instruments at a global level. So that gives them at least the consolidation of economic power at a global level, if anybody is or wants to allow these people who have screwed things up so badly to screw it up at a global level as a solution. Yeah, you know, go figure. But they figure that they have got the people in an arm lock because nobody wants to go to their bank and find that they can't take their money out, okay, or that it's all gone. So that's been held over people as a threat. On the same basis, these gangsters are also using the same threat on the world. The US gangsters are saying, you know, you got to play ball with us because you've got all your money invested in our dollar too. So the idea is to try and retain everyone's loyalty to the existing system and somehow work through it. Now, one of the ways of working through that would be, and they're already doing this, is so-called monetization of the debt. That's where you move the debt off the balance sheet. This is just games with pieces of paper, balance sheets, etc. But nevertheless, it's used to track productive capacity. So you move the debt off the balance sheet of the banks, for example, and you monetize it and you move it onto the government. Now, you should take a look, even before this hit, at the projections for US spending by the government. The projections of what they need to spend on Social Security, on militarization, on Medicare, on Medicaid, on all of those. If you actually take a look at the projections on that, even before this hit, you can see that there's no way that could be funded off the existing tax base. See, right now in Europe, for example, the government is spending around 45% of every euro that's spent is being spent by the government. Now, that is deadly because, as we know, that's just insider games takes place when that's going on. You have inefficient, ineffective organizations set up by political friends of political friends, and that's spending by the government 45% in Europe. Now, in the United States, that spending has traditionally been much lower, and people in the United States freak out at the level of state spending already, and yet it's only 30% in the United States. And if you go for vast socialized programs like a socialized single-payer health system, don't, by the way, because it's been done in Europe and it's appallingly inefficient. But Big Pharma is pushing for that because the hunt is on for sources of profit in this new environment. And Big Pharma could see that coming, so they have inserted themselves at the heart of government. So they want that spend going into medicine, no matter how ineffective it is. And it's already ineffective. Just imagine the levels of ineffectiveness if it's been run by the government, for crying out loud. So you're going to see, in order to meet these requirements to monetize the existing debt, and in order to sustain the greedy aims of Big Pharma, for example, in the area of medicine, you're going to have to see an increase in taxes in the United States. An unthinkable increase, but maybe not unthinkable in the context of a reflation. Suppose they monetize a considerable portion of the debt, deleverage as much as possible, and that deleveraging could be very painful because G7 currencies should really devalue by about 50%. Just imagine what that would do to the cost of imports into the United States, into Europe, into the G7 economies, because they're bubble economies, and the true value of those economies, trade weighted and productivity weighted, is nothing like the value they're at the moment. So you could have this, as I say, monetization of debt onto the backs of the taxpayer, simultaneously a massive program of deleveraging, which might involve currency revaluation in the G7, G8 economies. By the way, China is scheduled to join the G8. Yeah, they want them in. And then you might also see a reflationary move, which would be, in effect, free money from the government. That's what they would give to people in the United States. They would hand out money on a pro rata basis, free money, but once again, monetized and coming off the credit of the government. So that would change the game totally in the United States. that would involve a huge New Deal expenditure in government projects. This is the next level of scam. Having screwed it up at the corporate level, the idea now is to move back in at the governmental level. They already control the government and set up these huge programs to do whatever dumbass ideas that will make money for them that they've come up with. So that's very definitely a route that they could choose. Now, whether the American people are dumb enough to buy a system like that where they're getting free money from the government, well, who's providing that free money? They are. And they'll be paying back those loans they just gave to themselves, government guaranteed loans, in order to continue the system. It's also possible that as a fallback option, they may relinquish the issue of debt on government spending. In other words, that all this hype about the Federal Reserve and what a terrible drag it is, that would actually be used to dismantle the existing Federal Reserve structure. So that would be presented as a huge advance. And essentially that would be the basis of the issuance of this new government capital. And as I say, that would be sold to people as a great move forward. But what it would do is it would forever change the balance, because it would bring that 45% level of GDP coming from the government, it would bring that regime to the United States and implement that in the United States. And it is an absolute stranglehold on true productivity and progress. Because already in the United States, let's say with that 30% of spending originating from the government, and with the monopoly capitalism which is in charge, of which, say, Microsoft is a classic example where you've got no choice, you've got around about 70-75% of the economy in the hands of monopolistic interests. That was what brought down the Soviet Union, was not its economic structure per se, but the predominance of corrupt, vested, monopolistic interests in making sure that they did well at the expense of everybody. So if you've got already about 75% of the US economy in the control of essentially monopolistic forces, and you shove government spending up, and you also have all these state programs rolling out, etc., etc., which are sucking up productive capacity, then you would move to like 85-90% of the economy being in the hands of monopolistic forces. And that would be the death knell for what is one of the most productive and dynamic economies on the planet. But, you know, these people are not interested in progress. They're interested in making money, dude. Progress is totally incidental. So where is real progress? And what is progress anyway? We've taken a look at the systemic crisis and how deep it is, 60-1 leveraged it is, and the financial tsunami which is about to hit. We've taken a look at what their plans are for where they'd like to take it. Where should we be taking it? That's what I'd like to take a look at in the next segment. Let's take another break for music. This is Jape, and it's a live version of Vibe as a Man. J-A-P, Jape. Yeah, it's terrific. Check out the recorded studio version, but it doesn't have the punch of this one. This is The Beautiful Truth on breakfornews.com with Fintan Dunn, and I'll be right back.
I was all mine.
very welcome back. This is The Beautiful Truth on breakfornews.com with Fintan Dunn. You know, something I'm quoting from Henry Ford, and thanks to Anima Culture for posting that on the forum. I came across it doing research for this in the forum on breakfornews.com. And Henry Ford said, history's more or less bunk. And that ties into something else he said, which is relevant. Henry Ford said, thinking's the hardest work there is, which is probably the reason why so few engage in it. Well, luckily, some did engage in it. And hats off to those on the forum on breakfornews.com. Who don't mind thinking. Yeah, you know, they're prepared to actually think. It's tough, but they can do it. And Jerry Fletcher and Krakrakrates in the forum did a lot of thinking in the thread on history, fiction, or science. And that's an examination of the historical record and how much of it is total BS. But they also touched on, and Jerry in particular looked into the issue of money and where the money system came from. And it did come out of the Venetians, it seems, the modern money system. They're the guys who were huge traders, and they invented the system of double-entry bookkeeping. Thanks, guys. And the Venetians were at the heart of this development of the modern financial structure. And, for example, you have the issue of a loan and redeeming a loan. You need to redeem loans. Interestingly enough, redemption is a religious concept as well. Oh, that's an interesting overlap, because you need to be personally redeemed too, of course, in most religious belief systems. You got to pay off the debt of your original sin. You are born in original sin debt, and you got to pay off that sin debt until the day you die. So we are working with presuppositions which are religious and structural and financial and social and attitudinal, that go right back into history. And an awful lot of that history is bunk, by the way. You can check out that thread. I'll link it in the post that goes with this audio. But anyhow, that work does highlight to us that we need to move away. Whatever it is we do as a new economic structure, it needs to move away from the idea of redemption and being born into debt. No, in fact, it's the reverse. You were born into a birthright as a member of a productive, successful community, which is capable of feeding itself, clothing itself, housing itself, and entertaining itself. And as a member of that community, you have a birthright, an original birthright, not an original debt. And so you're entitled. You're entitled to the basics of food, shelter, clothing, and the ability to be creative in your own right as an individual. That's your birthright. And right now the keys to that birthright are held by the financial oligarchs, and that oligarchy stretches all the way back into Venice, if not further. So we're going to have to rethink all of that. In fact, this involves rethinking at every level, because this is the manifestation of what was forecast by Alvin Toffler in The Third Wave, and also in the book Future Shock. He talked about a systemic crisis of every level in modern society, with a deep need to reinvent itself on every level. Now, maybe it's only when it arrives at the financial level and the need for financial reinvention, and that's the point that we're at now. And so part of that process of reinvention, as well as inventing ourselves away from the idea of original debt, is also the big downsize, baby. The big downsize is here. It's been here ever since the internet got up and running, because we no longer need to conglomerate in individual locations to communicate. We can communicate across distance, and that means that small is beautiful, is enabled by virtue of the internet technology, and it also means that we can return, like Dorothy, back to Kansas, back to the farm, and out of the cities. Cities are history, and they have been since the internet was invented. And also, our inventive capacity has long ago surpassed the point where we had to struggle to do the basics of feeding ourselves and housing ourselves. The basics on all that, hey, we nailed that. And an awful lot of the rest of so-called economic activity that goes on, and nowhere is that more evident than in Wall Street, is fluff. It's froth. And so we need to rethink why we're spending all that time and energy doing stuff that's total froth, and what we should be doing instead. And in an era where capitalism has produced all the consumer goodies we need in spades and is churning them out at a massive rate across the globe, thus destroying the potential for any money-making capacity in that arena, and this is leading to all the problems that we have, we need a new focus, and there will be a new focus on social efficiency. Question: is it efficient to wage a war on drugs which costs you 10, 15, 20 times what it would cost you to give free drugs to anybody who wants them? And if you want to destroy your life, hey, that's your problem, baby. We'll provide you with assistance in order to make sure that you don't do that, because we don't like to see people do that to themselves. But hey, instead of a whole new raft of spending to rebuild America's infrastructure, take all the people waging the war on drugs and put them fixing up the roads. That's the kind of focus on efficiency that we need. Is it efficient to spend lots of money on hospitals? No, it's not. It's more efficient to make sure that people are living in a way that's psychologically, psychically, and physically healthy, so they don't end up in hospital in the first place. That's more efficient use of social resources. So the new paradigms are downsized and efficiency focused. And that's the point we're at, is where we're examining these issues. Right now, the issues of what's the nature of capitalism and is it a good system of social organization is back on the agenda. And we're dealing with issues of the overall global economic structure right now. So, as I say, it's only when Toffler's multi-level systemic crisis reaches a crisis at the financial level that you begin to finally get this root and branch re-examination of where we're all headed. And the first country to grasp this issue of downsizing and focus on social utility of activity as opposed to its profit notional, the first country to do that will lead the world. And if many countries embrace it simultaneously, we will literally transform the world. This is the nature of the change period that we're in. And don't underestimate the scale and scope of the change that's taking place. I spoke earlier on about the three waves of economic stunts which these guys pulled: neoliberalization, globalization, and financialization. Look what's happening, folks, all around you. These developments took 30, 40 years to roll out. Right now, financialization, it's dead, baby. It's blowing up. It's the bubble that's bursting. Right now, globalization is dead, as individual countries realize that, hey, it's every country for themselves right now. It's everyone looking after their own national interest right now. And we have a glut of consumer products globally, and we can't solve our problems by manufacturing more stuff. It's not the answer. And also, we've seen neoliberalization discredited. The idea that trickle-down works, that giving money to the rich means eventually we'll all get some. No, that's dead in the water too. So right now, the three bulwarks of the ideological system which we've had for the last 30, 40 years are lying in tatters all around us. That's the scale and scope of the change that's going on. That's us dealing with the third wave. I say bring it on, because look, we've been active on the issue, for example, of 9/11 since it happened. And where have we got? Nowhere. And where were we ever going to get? I knew that. Nowhere until the crisis reached the point where people had to finally deal with the shit instead of hysterically engaging in activities designed to make sure they don't have to do that thing which Henry Ford spoke of, and which is so difficult for most people outside of Break for News and other thinking places. They finally have to start thinking. Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? And one final aspect of the new era I'd like to touch on is the issue of localization and globalization. Using the internet, we are now connecting globally. We have to match that with an ability to connect locally. Connect locally, you're cutting out all the middlemen. We're going to see the rise and rise of that, and you've got to be implementing that as a strategy. Connecting locally and connecting with your electronic community internationally and globally through the internet, with centers where, like on breakfornews.com, where you can develop shared viewpoints and you can network globally. You know, for so long we've been talking about issues of waking people up, and it's so hard as long as they're busy suckling on the great breast of the system and it's keeping him happy, feeding him. But when the milk runs dry, well, that's what's happening. And it's like that line of the Love Shack from the B-52s. Bang, bang on the door, baby. Louder, I can't hear you. Bang, bang on the door, baby. Well, that's what it's doing. It's banging on the people's door right now. Change, it's here. They got to deal with it. There's no escaping it now. This is the third wave. And it's hitting right now. Okay, I just skimmed the surface of a lot of stuff. There's a lot to talk about, and I'm looking forward to doing that. I'm also looking forward, if you can assist us, to some financial help, and not from those who usually support breakfornews.com. You've done that, folks. No, I'm talking about people who don't usually, who read the website, who visit here, who post, whatever, but who never even shove a few bucks our way. You should do that. That donate button, it's not just there for decoration. And yeah, in these straitened economic times, we're not talking about a fortune. But every little helps, folks. Okay, that's it for this edition of The Beautiful Truth on breakfornews.com. I will be back very shortly with more. But in the meantime, for Break for News, this has been Fintan Dunn reporting.
Will you always keep me warm? Home is safe and away from home. Keep day for night, and as the day fades, burn a candle right for me. Will you always keep me warm? Home is safe and away from home. Keep day from night, and as the day fades, burn a candle right for me. Walking into the sun. Walking into the sun. Walking into the sun.
Walking into the sun.